Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sairam from Prashanthinilam, the most happening place on the planet. As I always say, I am Team Odisha's Bishu. The month of October has begun. And yes, indeed, it is a very significant month. Next only to November, when we celebrate Baba's birthday, because it is in this month of October that 75 years ago, the Lord unequivocally declared to the world His advent and the purpose of His coming. In fact, even before that historic day of October 20th, 1940, Swami then, who was called as Raju, already had prepared so many around Him for this moment. Several of those around Bhagwan knew that He was definitely something divine. One of the teachers in Uruvakonda was Mr. Tammi Raju. And Bhagwan, as Raju, treated Tammi Raju's wife, Kameshwar Amma, very affectionately. He used to call her Amma. Kameshwar Amma used to sing bhajans. In those days, bhajans were about Rama. One of the important bhajans was Shri Ram, Jai Ram. In fact, Tammi Raju's home had become a place of Sai miracles. Bhagwan would grant them visions of the gods and show them other thrilling spectacles from the scriptures. On one Janmashtami day, Raju asked Kameshwar Amma to keep a peetam or a pedestal, a seat which is generally meant for holy people or the gods. So Bhagwan asked her to keep a peetam and said that He would go on top of that and give darshan to everyone on that Krishna Janmashtami day. And that day, what He did just submerged each of them with thrill that they had never ever experienced in their life. Srimati Venkama, Bhagwan's sister, recalls how Bhagwan agreed to show everyone present that day the various leelas of the Lord from different eras. He just told them to watch Him, and like a movie, they saw Raju transform into the form of Narayana on the ocean of milk, reclining on the Vatapatra. Then Swami would announce next what form they would be seeing, and then immediately His form would change, and all these changes happened in quick succession. Of course, all the people did get enough time to imbibe the beauty and splendor of each form and be struck. They were struck by the instantaneous power of Bhagwan Sankalpa. Swami became Gajendra, raising his trunk to greet Vishnu on the horizon. He transformed into Krishna, the cowherd boy leaning on a tree and playing the flute. He became the Gopala on the awe-inspiring Kalinga serpent. He was the next moment Radha, Krishna, Lakshmi, Narayana, Parvati, Parameshwara, Saraswati, Brahma. They saw Him as Sita, Rama too. And then Bhagwan said, "See her, Satyabhama," and they saw Satyabhama. Again an invisible call, and then they had the vision of Mohini, the form that Vishnu had assumed to distribute the nectar between the angels and the demons. They saw the vision of Prahlada yearning for Narayana. And after this, immediately they saw how Narasimha annihilated Hiranyakashipu. They saw the avatars of Vamana, Parshurama, Buddha. Swami showed them the killing of Sishupala, Saindava and other demons. There was the scene of the Lord bringing the Parijata flowers. Then the scene changed to the Lord as Panduranga and then as Narada, and Narada ecstatically praising the Lord, singing His name. Then they saw the Lord as Navanita Chora, the Bala Krishna, stealing butter. After that, as Abhimanyu, the Abhimanyu who was killed by the wicked Kauravas. And at the end of all this splendid, mesmerizing visions, in the end, there was this magnificent Murti of Shirdi Sai. Finally, Bhagwan gave them, revealed to them who He is. Now, who is the one who has come again? Srimati Venkamma Garu used to say, how can one ever forget those shining forms? Each form was so full of vitality. Each one glowed before our eyes. In fact, after this, Mr. Tammi Raju started writing Sri Sainatha Satakam, a collection of 108 poems on Shirdi Baba, which took shape as a printed book in 1944. And at Tammi Raju's request, Baba was to go one evening to his house to go through the manuscript. But apparently, the members of Bhagwan's family at that point in time did not like this idea because they thought that Raju was probably defying a Muslim Baba of Shirdi. They thought Shirdi Sai was a Muslim Baba and why is Swami talking about him? So they actually compelled Swami, instead of going to Tammi Raju's house, to accompany them for the evening show of a bioscope. Bioscope is basically a movie. In those days it was called a bioscope. Swami never liked to visit cinema houses, but that day he had no choice. They forced him to come along with him. So Swami went along, but strangely, in the cinema hall, the dynamo or the source of electricity for the cinema hall failed. It just did not work. They waited and waited. They tried and never ever started. There was no show that evening. The whole night there was no show. You know, all of them returned home disappointed. In fact, when they returned home, a member of Bhagwan's family actually had a severe asthmatic attack that night, and Swami cured that member by creating vibhuti. So there were all these silent and solid instances of his revelations. And then once Raju sent Kameshwaramma a picture of Shirdi Baba, and how he sent it to her is interesting. A bumblebee carried it to her. And sometime later, a baby monkey brought a cloth bag and dropped it near a balcony. And the bag contained a laddu as prasadam and a letter written by Raju saying that earlier I sent you the deity and now here is the prasadam. And then congratulating her for her devotion and her puja. Bhagwan even gifted Kameshwaramma a 6-inch geruwa cloth, which was in fact worn by Shirdi Sai when he went into samadhi. So many amazing manifestations in that period before the actual annunciation, the announcement of the avatarhood. Karim Saab, a classmate of Raju, narrates an interesting incident that happened during this period, during one physical training class when the children were free and Raju was playing about in front of the school building. He beckoned his friends to join him, but no one did because the hard ground was actually strewn with thorns and thistles. But this hesitation of all the children towards Raju immediately turned into excitement when they saw what was happening where Raju was putting his foot. What was happening is wherever Raju was placing his foot at that point on earth, little tufts of tulsi plant were instantly appearing. So now there was a thick, soft patch of tulsi which started forming all along the way that Swami was walking. And now it was easy to follow the footprint and follow the master. Isn't it so significant how easy the master makes the journey for us? That is what the Sadguru does. He makes our way in this hard journey of life so easy. By his soft touch, by the touch of his feet, everything changes. The hard, rocky surface becomes the soft, tender tulsi leaves. That is what the Sadguru does to us. In this month of October 1940, before the Sadguru announced and said, focus at the feet of the Sadguru, focus on my feet. In the early part of the month, in October 1940, the school was closed for Dasara holidays. And Sushilamma, Swami's brother, Seshma Raju Garu's wife, had gone to her mother's house in Kamalapuram. And during this time, one day, there was a telegram for Seshma Raju Garu saying, baby serious, come immediately. And the moment the telegram came, Raju went into a trance. And when he opened his eyes, he said, she will be all right by the time we reach Kamalapuram. And that's exactly what happened. By the time Raju and Seshma Raju went to Kamalapuram, the child of Seshma Raju Garu, who was sick, was happily playing. And then his wife explained, at 11 in the morning, a sadhu or a saint came. Maybe he got down from the Bombay Madras train. He said that he came from Shirdi and gave vibhuti and he blessed the child. And after this, soon after this, the child was fine. When Seshma Raju Garu heard this, immediately he connected to what happened that morning, how Raju had gone into a trance. So he was getting a glimpse of who his brother is. In fact, after their return to Urvakonda from Kamalapuram, the famous Hampi incident happened. The deputy inspector of schools, the health inspector, the public works engineer, the municipal councillor and the businessman of Hospet, which is near Hampi, all of them sent a joint invitation to Seshmaraju Garu to make a trip to Hampi along with his famous brother. And that is how Sri Seshmaraju Garu took this entire party and went to Hampi for that historic trip. In fact, Bhagwan even posed for a picture when he reached Hospet. He was wearing a dhoti and a half shirt. Bhagwan in his discourse many years later narrates how he was taken to the shrine of Virupaksha, how Raju complained of stomachache and did not go inside the temple, how when Aarti was offered to Virupaksha, Sri Seshmaraju Garu and others in the altar of Virupaksha saw Raju, and that is how he came out of the temple and checked, and he saw Raju sitting outside. So he checked again and again, rechecked, and every time he found that Raju was inside and outside. Only thing is, Seshmaraju had to now see him deep inside, which had not happened. While Seshmaraju Garu had doubts, the municipal chairman of Bellari, Ramaraju, he was clear. He knew, he believed that Raju is Virupaksha and Virupaksha is Raju. In fact, after this, Mr. Ramaraju wanted to offer something to Bhagwan after this blissful vision, after this confirmation. He actually got stitched for Bhagwan a short shirt. And even though he had stitched the shirt and that small pant for Bhagwan, he was not happy. He wanted to do something more. He wanted to give something more precious to Swami. So he went to a goldsmith and he got a gold collar pin made. And finally, he gifted this to Raju. Now with a lot of satisfaction, he pinned it on Bhagwan's shirt and said, "Raju, you should remember me whenever you wear this pin." 2 days later, the school reopened. And Bhagwan says, "I was going to school. On the way, the collar pin fell. It could not be found. And then I sang a song. The loss of the pin freed me from all worldly attachments." That was a symbolic way of bringing about that big change that was to come. Bhagwan sang that poem and said the link with worldly ties had gone in the form of this pin. The pilgrimage to Hampi had also served its purpose. Freedom from Maya was attained. That day, Bhagwan says, "I left home. Attachment to worldly objects is a kind of Maya. When these objects are given up, one experiences freedom from Maya." And the next day was October 20th. Right from morning, Raju appeared to be lost in a reverie. However, he managed to get ready to go to school, but halfway through the school day, his spirit sort of revolted. He returned home and threw his books and dramatically exclaimed, "I am no longer your Satya, I am Sai." And the brilliance on his face was so great that it blinded Sushilamma, her sister-in-law. She closed her eyes and she shrieked. But Bhagwan continued. He said, "I am going. I don't belong to you. Maya has gone. My devotees are calling me. I have my work. I cannot stay here any longer." That is how the mission began on October 20th, 1940, in this significant month. And I remember Bhagwan recounting this entire episode in his discourse on October 20th, 2002. He narrated all these instances and many more from his childhood. It was a beautiful recall from Bhagwan himself narrating his own story, which is real history. And towards the end, Bhagwan said, "My life is for the sake of humanity at large. The happiness of people is what is the happiness of Swami." Swami said, "I am not interested in my celebrations, my birthdays. I consider your birthday as my birthday. The day you are happy, that is truly my birthday. Though bodies are different, you should not give room for any differences. All are one. Be alike to everyone. And then finally Swami said, the relationship that Swami has with the devotees is not of a worldly nature. It is a relationship based on divine love. And I remember from 2002 onwards, or during that period, you had the Sai youth of Andhra Pradesh who always gathered on October 20th and presented programs in front of Bhagwan. It was almost like when Bhagwan saw these youth, he would recount his days as a teenager. And that, the way he recalled his days, he was immediately, all the youth connected with Bhagwan at so many levels. And that is how every time there was October 20th, you found so many Sai youth from Andhra Pradesh gather at the lotus feet and draw their inspiration from Bhagwan, offer their love to Bhagwan, and go back recharged to serve in his mission, to be an ideal, to be a torchbearer, to be a trailblazer. A few days ago, I had the opportunity to speak to Brother Vaishnavas, a very senior member of the Sai youth team of Andhra Pradesh, and I had the chance to converse with him. And today I want to play for you this conversation with Brother Y. Srinivas. So that is what we have now. That is how we are going to start this month of October as we march on to Bhagwan's birthday, the 90th birthday, inching closer and closer.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:54. And as I just mentioned, you're now going to listen to the conversation with Brother Y. Srinivas. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And this special conversation with Mr. Y. Srinivas, a name familiar as an inspiration to every Sai youth in Andhra Pradesh as well as in other states of India. Brother Y. Srinivas came to Bhagwan as a teenager when he was 20-something, way back in 1990. And since then, Swami has personally molded and guided every aspect of his personality, be it personal, professional, or as a proactive youth leader. And Bhagwan groomed him to be an effective instrument in his hands to channelize this mass of vibrant youth energy, especially in Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Under his leadership, the Sai youth of Andhra Pradesh have come to Bhagwan on countless occasions to receive directions and instructions from Bhagwan about how to be an ideal Sai youth. What are the values that should seamlessly reflect in a youth member of a Sai organization? What are the activities that the youth should be involved in at the Sai organizational level as well as in their respective spheres of professional and personal life? How to resolve ethical dilemmas at work, at home, in the Sai organization? What projects to take up collectively? What to do individually? How, when, where, and why should youth take up service activities? Brother Y. Srinivas is a treasure trove of timeless moments with Bhagwan. Moments which have unimaginably transformed and sublimated not only his life but the lives of hundreds of youngsters. In fact, brother has had the opportunity to personally witness how so many eager and young hearts blossomed beautifully after the masterly silken touch of the divine. And all these have only made him a more
inspired, powerful and dynamic leader. I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that we have him with us in the studios of Radio Sai today. So praying to Swami and offering our gratitude to him, we begin this conversation. Welcome, Brother Vaishnavas, to Outside Inside, Deep Inside.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram, brother. It's a pleasure.
I know asking you to talk about your moments with Swami is like asking you to pick and share one or two roses from a garden full of fragrant, glorious roses, and each one is so beautiful and each one is so beautifully fragrant with divine message. But we have to begin somewhere. I've been thinking of having this conversation with you, I don't know for how many years. And I saw you this morning and I thought, for somehow something inspired me today, and I said I should not lose it, even if it's a Sunday and even if it's a very busy day for you and me, but we got to start this session of capturing these moments, timeless moments with Bhagwan. So can we start with one particular aspect, because you know, you are someone who has seen so many Sai youth come to the organization, grow in the organization, and you know, and blossom into beautiful personalities. You have seen how Bhagwan has transformed little by little, step by step, so many beautiful hearts. So,
yes.
One thing that I think we could take up today, which I have seen many youth grapple with, especially in today's times, are some of these myths associated, you know, with balancing their professional life and their work in the Sai organization. For example, one myth could be, I have just started my professional career, I am into a job, and there are a lot of demands on my time at the professional sphere, and probably I have a young family. How do you expect me to give time to the Sai organization? This is the time when I should be building my career. This is the time when I should be setting up my home, building, creating my family. How do you think, is it really possible? Is it really practical for me to really give this much time to the Sai organization? I'm sure you must have encountered so many youth who would have faced these dilemmas. So tell us, you know, how you have seen youth grapple these, what have been Bhagwan's directions on these, and you know, how you have seen people coping with this, and how you, as a senior now, you've been able to mentor and guide youngsters when they have such dilemmas.
Yes, brother. I mean, it's such a tough question to answer.
Oh, is it?
The point is, like you all know, we were caught young by Swami, and had he not caught us, we don't know where we would have been.
Yes.
Today. So we're that way fortunate to be mentored by him, guided by him, loved by him. But the point here is, it's a very important question pertinent to the young people that are in the organization, outside the organization today.
Yes.
As well. It's a very common question, and any 21-year-old boy would go through this dilemma of, am I going the right direction?
Yes.
Will I get the right job?
Yes.
Will I settle down with my family very well? You know, all these are typical dilemmas of any youngster. If you talk to any youth today, these will be paramount in his mind.
Hmm.
But the thing with our life was, Swami somehow stood by next to our side and he handheld us through this entire process.
Mm.
And many times he would tell us in the interviews and even during Paad Namaskar or in the darshan interactions, he would say that you do my work, you know, I do your work.
Mm-hmm.
You do my work and I'll take care of your work.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't understand in depth as to what Swami meant with that statement. But when we actually ventured into corporates as we moved along, we, just like any other youngster, feels the pressure, the anxiety of a corporate environment. We all went into corporates similarly. And the target pressures, you call it anything, you call it night shifts, day shifts, it could be anything for that matter,
yes.
Right bosses, right peers,
yes.
Right employees, I mean, everywhere it's a concern.
Yes.
So, but then the point here I would like to state is that a youngster should learn to partner with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practice that we youth should pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And they should, each one of us should learn to partner with Swami.
So what exactly you mean by partner with Swami?
Many times, you know, if you look at typical youngsters today, they compartmentalize all these activities. Like their work is separate, family is separate, Swami and organization is separate. It's, and Swami used to typically say that, don't treat them as separate. It's all together. I mean, with you, in your family, I'm with you in your work, I'm with you even at your organizational activities. So everywhere I'm involved. So Swami is part and parcel of everyone's life. So with that objective, everywhere, even during work, I mean, I used to have a small practice when I worked, served the corporate. So every monthly goal sheet of my company, I would typically place near Swami's photo in my cabin, you know, in my office space. So, and I used to tell Swami silently that all these targets are yours, and your success means my success, and my success means your success.
Yes.
You know, and it is only because of you I am existing, and you have to take care of all this. We have to bring Swami into our life at every step, involve him with a whole heart, and pray to him intensely, even during our worldly activities. You know, not just when we are in Kulwantol or when we are in Shivam or in some place, not just in the Sai Center. So Swami is much beyond the Sai Center. He is in our home. He's in our office, he's everywhere. So, and we should somehow learn to, you know, get to that new connection, the deeper connection with Swami, and then learn to partner with him. And then, and in fact, I heard from a couple of mentors who taught me, who groomed me in the Sai organization. I believe Swami told my mentor one day that, my mentor was a doctor, in fact, and he had lots of issues. He had a very important position of the organization, taking care of the entire district, Seva, all those projects. And he had a big hospital which he was running himself. Mm-hmm. So, and he was doing so many surgeries, and in the weekends he would plan so many Swami's Seva projects, activities and all that, meetings and other things. And he would always struggle for time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was his concern, and many times he made a mention of this to Swami. And he would request Swami to at least permit him to give away the hospital to his partner,
mm-hmm.
and so that he can do full-time Swami's work, or give full-time the district president role to some other friend of his, some other member, Sai member in the organization, so that he can run the hospital properly. And so he can help so humanity with the surgeries and all that. But Swami, for about 30-35 long years, never allowed this gentleman. And Swami said, even with your surgeries, you're doing so much of seva. So how can I allow you to not do that? And it's a great opportunity. How many can become doctors? So I will not approve this. And you have to carry both the things. And you cannot give away the organization role to somebody. Nor you cannot disown the hospital. Both are equally important to me. So, and then for 35 long years, Swami kept this mentor of mine motivated to continue both the activities. And till he was like 70 odd years old.
Oh my God.
And then, and he was a very important member of the organization. Mm. And he had a huge hospital also.
Mm.
And both he managed. And this tells very clearly this, the importance of the work in our spiritual life as well. And Swami used to tell us when we were youth that if you don't stand well, if you don't stand firm on your feet, how will you take care of your families? How will you take care of your family obligations? All the expenses, the costs. It's important that you stand up tall, you stand very successful. It's very critical. Okay, it cannot be so that one is very active in the organization and he has a terrible job. It's an imbalance in life. So Swami would always expect, whether it is Sai students or youth or anybody, Swami would expect each one of us to be pretty successful in whatever we do.
Yes.
It could be family, it could be work, it could be seva. All three are very critical components of anyone's life.
But you know, when youth join the organization, especially in the early stages of their career, they would be having this concern, as you very rightly said, that, you know, they want to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to give all their time to their careers. And every time they think that, okay, it's every Saturday, Sunday, you have to give it for service. Am I losing out on, you know, working for my career? Maybe I could have spent that time, picked up something else, and maybe I'll grow in the organization. Maybe I'll do something better for myself. Am I really losing out or jeopardizing my career or my youth by working in the organization?
Not really, because my personal feeling is that Sacha Sai Organizations Association is a blessing to each youth member, because the kind of exposure that you get in this organization, the way so many activities are planned, the way you learn leadership skills in this organization, the way you learn those interpersonal skills, the way you work with elders, work with young people. I mean, it's a huge learning. My personal belief is that the activity exposure of in Sacha Sai Organization for the youngsters will augur so well for them in their corporate life as well.
Mm.
I mean, if you look at the way empathy is a very important thing in a corporate space.
Yes.
And the such an organization thrives on empathy. There's nothing else. And if you look at the interpersonal skills, there's so hundreds of people, you will have to rally them around Swami's activities, and it requires terrific level of confidence, and the way you have to rally the troops and rally all the seva volunteers day and night. Sometimes it's so difficult. See, when we were working in the corporates with 50, 60,000 rupees salaries per month, we couldn't take 2 hours of work from our employees. Okay, and here is an opportunity where you have to work with thousands of people and there's no money involved, and where from they're drawing their motivation from. So the single point motivation for each of these volunteers, it's Swami himself.
Yes.
And it makes it even more challenging. I mean, without any concept of money, without any concept of acknowledgement or reward or recognition, these youngsters come here, and with only one motivation in mind, that is we are doing Swami's work, they will come here. And it's such a great opportunity to learn, and it's the opportunity to share space, share time, share efforts, share joys, share victories, share losses. Everything is an opportunity here. So it's like Vasudhaika Kutumbakam around us. And especially when youngsters had calamities, I've seen so many hundreds of youth going through some personal calamity at home or something. Within no time, hundreds of our other brothers, they literally visit that gen.
You have a much larger family.
Yeah.
And who are probably more closer to you than your own
Your own relatives. How many relatives show up when you are in crisis? So here...
But a Sai brother will come.
Sai brother will come. And you can be rest assured that they are always next to you in deep crisis. And where do you get these opportunities? So I strongly believe that association with the Sathya organization will actually hone up the skills of these young people, and it will actually make them perform better in the corporate space, and it will actually groom them to be better leaders in the corporate
space. Has it helped you personally?
Yes, of course, yes. In fact, the way I could manage hundreds of people in my corporate space, I could easily see my peers struggling, you know. You call it the communications, the way we operate with people.
The way we are able to manage
the people, the empathize with them, handle the egos, all this. We are adept at it. Because in the organization, you tend to pick up these skills.
Yes.
And especially crisis management is such an important thing that you learn here. Because always such as an organization is there when there is a crisis in the community.
Yes.
There is some flood, some relief operation, some important fire accident, it could be anything. So, and you really learn those crisis management skills. Thinking brain.
Thinking quick.
Quick in the 11th hour.
Yes.
And it requires terrific efficiency in the brain. So all those you pick up unknowingly.
Yes.
And many times we don't even probably possibly acknowledge the value add that we receive from the organization. And we learned so much personally.
Wow. I think apart from your intellectual quotient, for a personality to be complete, you have such an emotional quotient. You need that spiritual quotient. You need that emotional maturity.
Yeah. The well-rounded perspective of the personality.
Yes.
You pick up unknowingly. And so many elders mentor you. So much of guidance you receive from different age groups. And the young people will always table the energy.
Have you seen any person, any youth member that comes to your mind, you know, who had these kind of apprehensions, and how you have seen him, even though he was early in his career, he joined the youth movement, and, you know, he only continued and grew because this is what he realized what it was doing to him.
Yeah. In fact, I've seen many, I've seen many young people, probably quoting names may not be appropriate, but the thing is, I've seen hundreds of young people who have come to this organization with little hope in their life. They had no clue where their life was heading towards, and their family backgrounds were not great. They are not from some well-to-do families or something. And they came here just as some trainee into some computer programming activities that are run by the organization. And these young people, some of them were orphans actually. And then they came here with very little hope, and the way they gathered the skills in the organization, the way they were groomed into the computer training, and these guys started really doing very well for themselves. Their confidence levels were better. And today, some of them have got placed into Wipro, placed into Infosys. They have fat packages today. So some of them bought their new cars. And one boy just recently told me that he booked his first apartment.
Oh, wow.
So I'm sure... I'm very sure. I mean, at least I've seen about 3-4 generations of youngsters right from childhood. And I've not seen a single guy failing with his association with such an organization. Trust me. And I'm a standing testimony to that. So, and it personally did a lot of good to me, and it personally did a lot of good to hundreds of young people in this organization.
In fact, I remember some time back when I had the opportunity to go to Sri Lanka, and I was with the secretary of the Satya Sai organization Sri Lanka, a young person, and he was taking me around the country, and there was a youth meet there. And I saw him giving so much time to the organization, those 4-5 days or whatever I saw with him. And so I was really sort of taken aback, and I asked him, you know, how do you manage your job? Because he had a very high profile job. I see you that you're all the time doing organization work. Does it not jeopardize your professional commitments? He said, you know what, I have decided to give full time to the organization, because what I've realized is if as much time I give to the organization, that much Swami helps me in my professional work. Means that conviction has become so strong in him that, you know, if I keep this as priority, Swami will take care of what has to be achieved through me in the organization. And that has, every time it has got reinforced. Even that time when I was there, there were some commitments, and you know, he was supposed to fly out of the country at that time. He was supposed to go to Fiji, but suddenly things changed and he was there. You know, every time he said, and given that he was able to manage any situation, as you mentioned, you know, crisis management, given that he was able to always do the right thing, he was an invaluable asset of the company. You know, the company always said, you know, you do whatever you want, no problem. But, you know, you just be available. In case we need you, we have to contact you. But you can go ahead and do whatever you want to do. So he had that freedom.
Yeah.
And he could give so much time to the organization. And secondly, he said, you see how Swami works. There was some land which actually belonged to them, but you know, there was this war, Sri Lankan war for many years, and you know, they had lost all clue of that land. They had no hope of getting anything from that. But suddenly when the war stopped, and you know, under very mysterious circumstances, which quite unexplainable, some land which nobody else received, you know, whoever had their lands in that part of Sri Lanka, but somehow his land came to him, you know, with very little effort. And he said, see, now without doing anything, I'm getting this much, this much money every month. So in these little small and big ways, you know, you see Bhagwan constantly working for you. You're saying, as you first, what you mentioned, the partnership with God. I really like that thing, because at that point in time when we are young, possibly we think that, you know, we have to make our lives. But actually that is the time when we need so much support to make our lives.
Yeah.
And partnership with God helps that.
Yeah. In fact, it reminds me of one more instance where we were all sitting in the Divine Presence, and Swami was telling us how to prioritize your number of hours per activity. He was telling that 6 hours of personal time, 6 hours of sleep, 6 hours of work, and 6 hours of seva per day.
Oh, wow.
And he was telling us, the entire youth group was sitting, and Bhagwan was mentioning this. I mean, I don't know if all people will be as lucky as this Sri Lankan devotee that you're talking about. But then the young people should learn to balance all the activities. While we have to excel in our work area, we should also learn to partner with Swami, excel in the workspace, and also excel in the family space as well, you know. I mean, we have to somehow learn to nicely balance this out. And don't just, I remember one particular interview, one boy was asking Swami, that Swami, I have 99% faith in you that you will help me through this crisis. But somewhere I have this 1% doubt, Swami, whether you will help me or not, you know. And then Swami tells something interesting, and Swami said, that's the right thing. If you have 100% faith, then there's trouble. You don't do karma. You don't do activity.
You don't put your effort.
Yeah, you don't put your effort also. You just laid back. You just sleep. Allow, think that God will do everything. That won't happen. That 1% doubt is actually good, he said.
So that you put all
you
your
put
effort.
All your effort. And because of your 99% faith and prayer, I'll bail you out anyway. So this is what Swami said. So this again tells us the importance of partnering with him, talking to him as frequently as we can, and without compromising on the effort part,
yes,
the seriousness and the effort, the intensity that you put in work. It's exactly the same even in the family and even in organizational seva as well. So if we learn to balance all this beautifully, I'm sure each youngster with the skills that he acquires here in the organization he will do very well in the corporate space as well.
Mm. And I remember this Sri Lankan devotee also telling me that he actually grew up in the organization because of the exposure that he received in terms of working with people in the Sai organization.
Correct. Mm.
That has molded his personality, just what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Because here you get a beautiful platform to work across age groups and with seniors and with juniors and, as you mentioned, manage egos. And all that helps in the professional sphere.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. You are mentioning that, you know, how Bhagwan has said that if you devote your time to God's work, not that your professional work is not God's work, but you devote your time to something really selfless work, then God will stand by you. So have you had any such experiences on your own where you gave so much of your time, or there were times when you decided to do this because you have to, you know, you wanted to do this for the organization, and there was this occasion where you didn't know whether you were jeopardizing your professional career, and how you went through it?
Yeah, in fact, it happened many times, I would call it that way.
Okay.
Because I had my personal business way back in 95-96. And many times I get this dilemma. I mean, there used to be some very pressing need of the organization, some seva coming up. And my client would call me that time asking me to travel and things like that. So for me, it was kind of easy one way, because Swami had a lot of interaction with us during those times, and luckily I could prefer Swami always. I wouldn't call it personal merit, because it is not some sadhana thing that I always chose Swami and not business. I wouldn't like to put it that way. That's why I'm willfully mentioning. Since Bhagwan was so encouraging and he was talking to us so much, it was very easy for us to pick Swami as a priority than the other things. But it may not be true for all the young people. And here, you know, I can only say that, but I did experience a few instances where Swami really involved in our professional space, which came as a rude shock to me.
Okay.
I would call it loving shock. So, in fact, in many occasions, he never broached this subject at all whenever he interacted with me. And suddenly, amidst my family, Swami rakes up this subject.
Oh.
And it was like Swami said, see, after so much of effort, you got your promotion in the company, and now you are taking it very easily. You are not putting in enough effort. You are not working hard.
Oh.
All that. Suddenly, Swami mooted this. And I didn't know how to react to this, because I was busy with the organizational stuff, actually. And the thing that was running in my mind was, anyway, I got this promotion, all the reward recognition for all the good work that I've done. Let me focus on Swami's work now and get few things done there, like that. So, and then Swami said, no, you can't ignore this. You can't, so much of effort you have put in. Now you are heading the entire region. Now it's important that you focus now and make it big, like that. Swami pushed me.
Oh.
And then it was very unusual. I mean, earlier interaction, never Swami spoke about my work and how much intensity I should put in and all that. And then I'm glad retrospectively today that had Swami not pushed me, I would have possibly taken it easily entirely, yes, this entire context, and probably exited the company someday after enough work. But because Swami said that, I started putting my heart into the corporate work. And lo and behold, in 1.5 years time, I received a huge national award. It is such a recognition from 65,000 employees our organization had. We were about 4 of us that were picked for this award.
Oh, wow.
And so it was an international award. And the point I was trying to make is, Bhagwan knew that there was something in the offing for me. And that's why he pushed me at the right time. And lo and behold...
So that's what he will do, you know, when he sees you that you are...
Yeah.
Probably...
Slipping.
Too much in one direction.
One direction.
He wants to balance it.
Yeah.
So basically, the lesson is that you've got to balance it.
You've got to balance it, and don't get carried away. Seva projects are, of course, important. But we cannot ignore the corporate work that we all are assigned with so much of trust.
Yes.
The company employs us, pays us fat salaries, and they expect us to do some work for them. Swami used to say, if you remember,
yes,
if you take 10,000 rupees salary, do 20,000 rupees work.
Work, yes.
And double your work, he used to say.
Yes.
If companies run into losses, they cannot even employ you tomorrow.
Correct.
So it will affect the company, it will affect the employment of your peers, and of course it will affect you anyway. So it's important that wherever we work, we also excel there. and prove a point there as well. But again, this SAI association also, even in work, it is so very useful, mm-hmm. not just on the skill side. Mm-hmm. Even peers and bosses also have some kind of respect for people with SAI orientation. This is what I saw. They may not be very obvious with this because they would want to be equal to all. You know, yes. That is the typical approach of any corporate. But then they silently admire people with such fundamentals, such strength and integrity, such value systems. You know, they tend to admire people with such backgrounds because these guys are way apart from the rest, and the corporates would love such kind of people.
Yeah, because I think once you have integrity, once you have honesty, who doesn't want a person of this character?
Exactly. You can teach skills. You cannot teach values. Cannot teach values are very inherent in you. It has to be grounded and it's from within.
Hmm.
So the value systems are God's blessings. That's it. And then skills you can always learn and you can acquire over a period of time, but values. And that's why this association with such as an organization will give you a chance to practice these values. You cannot practice truth always in the corporate space.
Yes.
You cannot practice non-violence always in the corporate space. But here, the platform that such as an organization creates and gives you such a beautiful opportunity to practice these values.
Hmm.
Love, compassion, empathy, non-violence.
And try it here and
try it
become
here.
Adept here. Adept before here. You can.
Yeah, become a champion on those skills.
Yes.
And then deploy them anywhere else in the world, wherever you need it.
Hmm.
It could be at your with your family, it could be at your work.
Hmm. Amazing. Can I ask you if you can narrate any instances of, you know, how you have been trying to apply these one or two values in your corporate sphere or in your professional work, and how it has helped you in the growth of your company or in the growth of your career as a manager?
It's getting into your personal interview now. Anyway, so let's discuss that also. I mean, I saw 3-4 important places where I could apply what we learned here. I mean, I was basically into business development all my life. And then in business development, everyone has targets, region targets, and person-to-person targets. And then it so happened that my boss, when he hired me, he had a feeling that he should give me a lofty target because he knew my skills from the other company. I was coming from a bigger company, so he had lots of expectations. So the first day, it went like this. You know, the first day my boss called me and he said, Srinivas, I have lots of expectations and I want you to deliver more than anyone else can deliver in our branch. So this is your goal sheet. This is how he gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And then even before I met my boss, I did my own goal sheet.
Okay.
You know, I, just to assess where I am, how much I can commit to the company and things like that. And I had one clear-cut goal in my mind, and I was somehow, I think it's a way, SAI training, you call it, and I had a feeling that I can do much more. I had so much of potential and capability, so I drafted my own goal sheet. And then when my boss was actually interacting with me, I saw the targets that my boss gave me were half of what I planned for myself.
Oh, my God.
So then I said, sir, if anyone else would have been in my place, he would silently accept boss's goal sheet.
Yes.
I did the other way. I said, sir, I don't want to do this small goal. My goal is much bigger. I will do this goal.
Wow.
So, I mean, just for the fact that, you know, Swami used to say in Telugu that, Ollu dachukogoddu. Ollu dachukodam ante, don't hide your body. I mean, do hard work. Kashtapadi pancheyandi. Kashtapadi ishtapadi pancheyandi. He used to say.
So work hard.
Work hard and work with love.
Yes.
Ishtapadi.
Hmm.
One day, it was a personal interaction with Bhagwan. And I was actually thanking Swami. And I somehow narrated these words to him. Swami, you have done so much. And you are such an inspiration to me. And I want to do a lot. This was the conversation I was having with Lord. So I said, I want to do a lot. And I was like pumping my fist. I want to do a lot, Swami. I want to do a lot for this mission. And then Swami was pumping fist with me.
Oh.
And he was saying, do it, do it. I want you to do a lot. I want you to do a lot.
Wow.
But then Swami said something very interesting. He said, Srinivas, what you said is good, but I didn't like the word shrama that you used, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I couldn't fathom what he was trying to mention. So he said, you said, Swami, mirento shramato, mire inta chestunaru, mem emi cheyatledu. You said just now, I am not doing all this with shrama in mind.
Shrama means out of exertion.
exertion. Yeah.
Yes.
So, Swami said, I'm not doing any of these things with Shrama in mind.
You said, Swami, you have exerted so much.
Exerted so much.
For me.
Not just for us, basically.
For us.
So, you've exerted so much for our sake. And we as young people, we are not doing anything. We are not delivering, the solid work. I mean, we wish to really do a lot to the mission. I mean, this was the dialogue I was having. And then he said, no, all this is good. But the word Shrama that he used, I didn't like, he said. He said, I never have done all this karyakramam. Inta pani nenu, Shrama bhavamto nenu cheyaledu. Prema bhavamto nenu chesanu. He said.
Wow.
So, and he said, if you do it with Shrama, the exertion in mind, you feel the stress of it, he said.
Yes.
You feel the stress of it. You get fatigued,
yes.
He said.
If you do it with Shrama means exertion. Instead of that, Bhagwan said he does it with prema.
And he said, if you do it with Shrama in mind, you tend to get fatigued and you cannot do long.
If you exert that way, you will get exasperated.
Yeah, exasperated. But if you do it with love, you feel like doing more. You feel like doing more. And you feel like you are not doing enough.
Yeah.
And that will bring you more
love
work.
Love fills you with more energy.
More energy, and it will make you do more work.
Wow.
And it's exactly the same in this context that we are discussing right now, that, you know, we have to do with prema, even the work.
Yes. So even the corporate work.
Even the corporate
work.
Yeah.
Do it
exactly.
With love.
That's what I was trying to mention. When boss wanted me to do less, I said I will do more.
More.
You know,
yes.
It is the prema for work, you know.
Yes.
And this is what Swami taught us.
Amazing. Amazing. I think that is something so beautiful. You know, Bhagwan always wanted that once you are a Sai youth or a Sai student or a Sai devotee, you should not, as you very rightly mentioned, not compartmentalize God's work to just what seva you do or
correct.
What you do only in the Sai Samiti, but with what intensity and love you do a Sai seva, the same intensity and love you should do a corporate work, the same intensity you should look after a family also.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very easily said than done.
I know.
But it is a sadhana in itself. And
yes.
In fact, my mentor was telling me that Swami told him that na pani meeru chesthe mee pani nenu easy chesestanu. And
okay.
Swami, one side Swami said, if you do my work, I'll do your work. But not just that. He said, you do my work, I'll make your work easy.
Make your work easy.
So when you have easy work, you have more time to offer it to Swami again.
Amazing. And I think this is something that many Sai youth have experienced, isn't it?
Yeah,
like when you
absolutely.
Keep Swami as the focus, logically you cannot explain, but you know, a lot of things happen at the nick of time and many things fall into place and suddenly you realize that, you know, you have accomplished something even though you have not put in that much effort. Like, he's like God has just opened a beautiful door because you always had him as the focus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have him as your partner.
Correct.
And I think you must have seen a lot of such instances in your life or in the lives of youth who've been part of the Andhra Pradesh Sai youth.
Yeah, many actually. In fact, if you touch any youth member today, he has a huge story to communicate. I mean, he has his own saga of love with Swami. And they draw courage, they draw inspiration, they draw motivation in the Sai organization. And it really does so much of good to them, just a persona, you know, the persona, the positive energy they radiate in the corporate space itself is very value-adding to them. They don't even realize many times that all this I've picked up. In fact, many youngsters tell us that because of that program, we learned so much. We learned how to run events, how to manage meetings. I mean, everything you learn.
Yes.
Yeah. Even before you get to the corporate. This is,
yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
So, you're like put in a cast.
Yes.
And you're already custom fit. And that's when you're getting into the corporate. So, what a boon and what a blessing it is to be part of this mission and Sai organization.
And a lot of intangibles actually get added on.
And what is not taught in the school?
Yes.
So none of these are taught in the school or the colleges. Even the best of the colleges cannot give you these skills.
Yes. And the other thing also which I wanted to discuss with you, brother, is this concept of sacrifice. Again, a myth that many Sai youth or, you know, youngsters might have is, you know, in this stage of my life, when I'm just beginning my career, how can I give out so much of my time? How can I give out, you know, my resources? This is the time I have got to save. This is the time I have to spend every inch of my time for myself. And
how can I sacrifice now? You know, I can sacrifice only when I've saved enough and when everything is looked after, my career is made, my family is looked after, you know, children have grown up and all that. At that time you ask me to sacrifice, I'll sacrifice. You don't ask me to sacrifice now.
This reminds me of something very interesting
okay. That
transpired between us and Bhagwan. So Swami one day was mentioning about what you can take to your next life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then he was saying that there are only two things that you can take to your next life,
mm-hmm.
you know, beyond the life, you know. So what can you take to your next life? So he said, it is only your good deeds and bad deeds, he said.
Mm-hmm. Your karmas.
Your karmas. So there are only two things that you can carry to your next life. It is the good deeds and the bad deeds. Bad deeds because you have to take the consequences.
Mm.
And good deeds because you have to take the consequences of it also.
Good consequences.
Good consequences, so
good
to say.
Good consequences.
So, yeah. But then, point is, if that is the focus, and if that is the only thing that is going to come with you for lives together, how foolish it is to run behind mirages and chase wrong goals. And it actually makes sense to be very focused on what you can take with you forever.
Yeah.
You know, none of these Dells or Deloittes or GEs can help you go to your next life. None of these. And then there's something very interesting that Swami said once is that even during the sadhanas, you know, a lot of people are associated with bhajan, a lot of people are associated with meditation. It could be any sadhana devotees pursue various paths. But then once Swami said that the importance of seva, and he strongly recommended, he said,
mm-hmm.
seva has the greatest sadhana embedded into it. He said that in bhajan or in meditation, the idea is not to demean the other paths of sadhana, but the point is, Swami said, only in seva, there's an element of self-sacrifice involved. Because you end up giving away, putting aside your ego, you end up giving away your time, you for someone else's sake.
Yes, because here it involves not just you, but other people. And it involves you giving up something for someone else.
And then even in the part of giving up, let's say someone gives money, you can always earn the money back.
Yes.
Someone gives you love, you can always earn the love and give love, take love again.
Yes.
But if you give away your time,
yes,
and you're giving away a piece in your life. And
you're giving away part of your life.
It's irretrievable.
Yes.
So, the Swami always used to say that giving away time for somebody, when you do seva, let's say you go to some orphanage, and you're giving away a piece of your time of your life, spending 3-4 hours with those orphans, and a permanent portion of your life is given to them. And that talks about the conviction and intensity of seva. And he said, when you do that self-sacrifice, because seva has self-sacrifice embedded in it, he said, it can earn God's grace.
Oh, wow.
It can earn God's grace. Not that others don't earn God's grace. But Swami said, seva brings you the eligibility to earn His grace. That's what He said.
Because you're giving away a part of your
integral
life which cannot be retrieved.
Retrieved, yeah.
Selflessly.
Selflessly, yeah.
And God is selflessness.
I mean, what I mean to say, communicate by this story, is sacrifice we have to do only to earn His grace.
We are not losing at any time. When we are sacrificing, we are never losing.
We are actually gaining.
Yeah,
we are gaining a lot. And the grace has to be earned. It cannot be free.
Yes.
As the Swami used to say, it's like an open tap. But the vessel beneath should be proper.
Yes.
So, you cannot put an umbrella to the sun and ask for sun rays to fall upon you. It doesn't happen like that.
Yes.
So, somewhere we should learn to sacrifice, and through sacrifice we should earn God's grace.
Yes.
And God's grace, one shouldn't take it for granted that it is given. You know, what is our bit of effort to earn it?
Yes.
So it's very critical to earn the grace.
That's a very important lesson, in the sense that many times people tend to think that, you know, if you are giving, then you are losing.
Mm.
But as you very rightly mentioned, and Swami has clearly said that when you are giving, you are actually gaining.
Yeah.
You are gaining something much, much profound. The way I think of it, you are actually just giving away peanuts and you are getting diamonds.
Diamonds, actually.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something called Law of Giving. It's not Swami's book that I read. It's some book outside. It's mentioned that Law of Giving is an important thing to understand.
Mm-hmm.
It says that the universe is filled with abundance.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of abundance all around us.
Yes.
God has already created all that.
Yes.
And He says that when you give something, you're adding to the infinity. So it becomes infinity plus one.
Mm-hmm.
And you're creating a vacuum in your own personal resources.
Yes.
And then this vacuum, since you are surrounded by infinity, infinity will fill you in, fill up your vacuum that you created in your personal resources. So in reality, what he says is, whenever you give, you actually receive from the abundance.
Yes.
Because you create a vacuum. It's just like water flowing onto a pit.
Yes.
There's a pit and there's a flowing water. And water, while it is going, it will fill up the pit and go further.
Yes.
So it's just like the way the abundance is all around us. And when you create a vacuum in your resources, it will again fill you in.
Yeah.
So he says, well, whenever you give, you create a vacuum, you get filled back from the abundance.
Mm.
And he says, the more you give, the more you receive. You give, 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 you receive, receive, receive. And he says, in fact, there's no difference between giving and receiving.
Yes.
Actually, giving will make you eligible to receive. That's what he says.
Yes. And receive new things.
Yeah.
Maybe receive better things.
Just like the way you said, give peanuts and receive diamonds. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah. But I think once you have that spirit of thinking about the other person, I think Bhagavan very beautifully mentioned, you know, the expansion of joy.
Mm-hmm.
Where he said, you know, Jesus first, God first,
yeah,
and others next and myself last. It's really interesting that, you know, the very word joy says that you have to think of yourself last.
Mm-hmm.
Then you will experience joy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that is something you get to experience in a Seva project, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And also once Swami was mentioning about the life of happiness. What is the pursuit of a young person today? It's all about happiness.
Yes. Everybody wants to be happy. That is what everyone is struggling every day for.
It's become a template, isn't it? Nobody wants sorrow. Nobody wants grief. Everyone wants happiness.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So what is happiness? So one day Swami explained to us.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what is life of happiness?
What is a life?
What is a life filled with happiness?
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously we had no answers. So Swami went on narrating. He said, life of happiness means, normally young people today, if you look at their lifestyle, they tend to overindulge when they are young.
Yes.
The indulgence into vices, indulgence into all kinds of habits, food without sleep, abusing the body, all kinds of. And ultimately when they are young, a youth will not figure out, because diseases don't surface when they are young.
Yes. Body is very resilient.
Body is resilient, agile. So it is able to absorb the shock.
Yes.
But after a few years of this kind of overindulgence, about 40 years or 45 years, disease strikes them. The moment disease strikes, all the confidence is gone. All the motivation is gone. And you start getting doubts whether you have the steam enough to run the engine anymore. So can you pursue those big goals in your life? All this will become a question mark. So literally, it's a roller coaster ride a youngster is going through today, right? So, but then what Swami said is, life of happiness doesn't mean that 45 years of overindulgence and 30 years or 40 years of disease. That is not life of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
He said, life of happiness is happiness even in the 80th year, 85th year.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get to that level of happiness? So Swami said, you have to maintain this balance. Don't overindulge anywhere. Don't overeat. Don't oversleep. Don't get into vices.
Even as a youngster.
As a youngster.
When you are 20 something, 30, if you have maintained a moderate...
Moderate living. And maintain it over periods of many, many years. You know, balance it without any temptations. And then you will be assured of a life filled with happiness if you do this.
Till your last minute you can keep smiling.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you don't become dependent on someone. You don't really become so physically incapacitated or, you know, that you feel, well, what is the point of my life? Even even after having spent so many years.
Correct. Absolutely.
You would have spent like 70 years. I mean, you look back at your life and you feel, oh, I've missed so much of my time. I don't know what I did with my life. You don't get...
One day, one elder was telling me, one criminal lawyer, a friend of ours. So he was mentioning that how fortunate you guys are. That when you are young, you know, Swami picked you guys and put you into the right context of things and gave you the right goals to pursue, you know, motivated you to do the right things in life. And he was 70 years old when he was telling me, and he was saying something very important. He said, when a man is on the deathbed, you know, he shouldn't get into this guilt that he frittered away all the energy, all the intellectual ability that he had, and he has not done anything useful in life. This kind of guilt should not occur to any person who has led a life of 70, 80 years, whatever. And on the deathbed, one should not be guilty.
Yes.
That's what this elder was telling me. And he said, you guys are so fortunate That Swami made you very purposeful and, you know, very goal-centric and with the positive goals in mind. Yes. So that all the people who are associated with the Sai mission, retrospectively, feel very joyous about their association. And so many great things Swami had executed through us. And, yes, you know, it is such a delight.
Yes.
Just to be aware that you are a nut and bolt in his,
yes,
mission,
yes,
itself is such a joy.
Yes.
And I don't think any Sai devotee will have guilt,
yes,
that,
yes,
he frittered away time. Or,
yeah, when you are 50, 60 or 70, when you look back, you feel
happy that it was a positive contribution to, yes, humanity. And,
yes,
and in whatever little
whatever way, energies and talents God gave, you were able to use it for society's upliftment.
Absolutely.
Wow. When that happens, automatically you feel so elevated. I think you feel, and you can go back smiling.
Smiling, exactly. And you can pass away peacefully.
Peacefully, yes. In fact, that is what Bhagwan once said to Mr. Dhakappa, the state president of Satya Sai Organizations Karnataka. Swami said you should pray for this thing, anayasa mrityu. Swami said you should always pray that, you know, you have a kind of death which is absolutely peaceful and you are not dependent on anyone in your last moments. And I think that will happen only when you know how to be happy, cultivate this right way of being happy.
Yeah.
In fact, and as we are talking on these lines, I thought it might be good to also share how many times you think it is unfashionable to actually get involved in service activities and, you know, things of this nature when you are in the prime of your youth and you can actually enjoy life the way it is generally perceived.
Yeah.
But I think as we are discussing, probably you also might have seen how such type of youth now think it is fashionable actually to engage in Sai activity, because that is where probably they experience this joy, that the joy that they will not get it in anywhere else in the so-called pleasures.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, it reminds me of something that Swami told me when I was very young, actually. Mm-hmm. I was 20, 21.
Okay.
So one day he was telling me that Srinivas, in Telugu Swami, mm-hmm, was mentioning,
mm-hmm,
Andaru Padu. Padu means a sapling.
Mm-hmm.
Mokka means sapling.
Mm-hmm.
So to safeguard the sapling, you put a thorny bush around it.
Yes.
And Swami said, you did the other way. He said, mm-hmm, thorny bush is inside and sapling is outside.
Oh.
And then I was surprised. I said, what is Swami hinting at?
Yes.
So then I went back to my father, mm-hmm, and I said, Swami mentioned this. I mean, can you debrief this for me?
Mm-hmm.
Then my father told me the meaning of it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the white dress is not that you wear outside.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be inside.
Oh.
So the bushes are all inside.
Hmm.
You know, if you have the bushes inside. And put a sapling outside.
Just put the white dress outside.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So my father told me that transformation has to be real. You have to get into that intense thing.
Yes.
It is no part-time experience. It is no some ad hoc engagement. It cannot be like that. So my father brought some seriousness into the thing and he said, that's what Swami was hinting.
Wow.
So the point I was trying to say is, I see even today many, many young people having 2-3 social circles. They mingle with 2-3 different circles. Like Saturday, Sunday, they are with Sai youth, and Monday to Friday, they are with college youth. I mean, they maintain these 2-3 social circles. And that's where the serious concern is. You know how it is. Swami used to say that if you want God, you have to move away from the world. If you want the world, you will move away from God anyway.
Yes.
So it's a serious decision that every youngster has to take. Whether the decision should be, should I move towards God or should I move towards the world? So if the decision is properly taken, if you want to pursue God while you're accomplishing some fundamental aspects of life towards family, the obligations and all, it's okay. So, but then Swami will help you, guide you, yes, sail through those. But if you want the world, you're sure that you'll go away from God.
Yes.
And so beautifully, Swami, I have a feeling today that Swami has created a new lifestyle.
Yes.
For youth. You know, today, if you look at any youngster, they feel that going to cinema is one lifestyle, spending with friends or going to hotels, you know, holidaying and all that. This they think is lifestyle today. But then here, Swami created a new lifestyle for young people across the world.
Yes.
And he told thousands of young people to use their spare time to do something very productive instead, yes, of frittering it away with, yes, movies or, yes, hotels, or it could be anything.
Yes.
He wanted young people to be productive, do some seva to society, work in the villages, serve people who are helpless, and then be productive assets of the society.
It really adds to your personality.
Exactly.
It is not something to be ashamed of. It is something
it's a cool thing to do.
It's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And how beautiful it is to, from Monday to Friday, you're, let's say, I know that there's family obligations that come in the way, but then you can still nicely balance it out. And you can still find time. If you really have the love for Swami, time, it will give way.
Yes.
You know, the amount of intensity and love that we have for Swami, time will just make way.
Yes.
You know, this is my feeling retrospectively. If someone has says that there's no time, family and work is coming in the way, well, it could be genuine also. But then, but how much have you prayed to Swami to give you those opportunities to serve Him?
Yes.
You know, there was one, my mentor used to tell me that Seva Dal member should be like the dhobi.
Mm-hmm.
The dhobi comes to the house and he doesn't go away till we give clothes to
him. The washerman.
The washerman.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't go away till we give the clothes to him.
Yes.
So Seva should be sought like that. That's what my mentor used to say. I mean, he should sit at the door of the God.
And ask for opportunities.
Ask for opportunities, grab them, seek them intensely.
Yes.
Then he'll give you those clothes. He'll give you, like the washerman puts clothes. He'll give you a couple of opportunities. Then you grab them, do it with the whole heart. Then you ask for more. I mean, this is the attitude with which seva has to be pursued.
Because you pursue that with that intensity when you know that this is what is the true goal of life. This is what will actually add to my happiness.
Absolutely. You know, remember, those are the only two things you can carry to your next life.
Yes.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
The good deeds and the bad deeds.
Yes.
So why worry about all the other mundane aspects of life?
To be successful in life, whatever efforts we may put in, we know that, you know, ultimately, if a lot of things have to fall in place for you to be successful.
Yeah.
And we don't have control over 99.99 things about our life. We don't even know whether we were supposed to do this conversation. Anything could have happened and we could not have had this conversation.
Absolutely.
So all the time you need a divine hand. You need that grace. And with seva, with sacrifice, with selflessness, you earn his grace. And that will ensure that you live happily.
Absolutely.
And as you very rightly said, doing seva is today something which actually adds to your stature, which actually earns you respect. People may, you know, there could be peers who might on the face of it sort of sometimes make a mockery of it, but they have silent admiration
for
who you are and what you
are
doing.
Even the corporates actually, they
even
admire
in the corporates.
People. In fact, today, these days it is a fad to put on your CV that you are a social worker or something.
Yes.
So, but then it's all NGO kind of thing. But ours
is a more spiritual
sadhana-centric seva. See, there are many people who are doing good things. But then the way such as an organization does is way different from what others do. And the 3-4 important parameter differences that we have when compared to other seva organizations is, normally the so-called NGO work, they also do some very good work, but then the work is the activity is the main core for them.
Yes.
Okay, someone has a pain, so alleviate the pain. Someone needs education, give him education. Someone needs health, give him health. But our Sai organization work starts from there.
Yes.
We use those reasons as a bahana. I mean,
as an excuse. Medium,
It's like a tipping point, you know.
Yes.
And we then start interfacing with that person. And then go deeper and, you know, give him that experience of love and compassion.
Yes.
Swami is a Bhavapriya, no? And he always used to insist with what intention you did all this.
Yes.
So he said, it is not so much about the activity. Activity is an opportunity for you to surface those values in you.
Yes.
And then Swami used to say that, meelu emana change unda. Okay, you've done good work, but has it transformed you? Is your heart larger?
Yes.
Do you experience compassion in your heart? Are you able to speak to them with love?
Are you a spiritually better person?
Better person. And without surfacing these innate values in you, there's no point doing that work, Swami used to say. So, and that is the difference between other organizations and such as an organization. So, I mean, we go one step higher and activity is just a reason for us. And then we get into that experience of sadhana. And Swami used to say that you are not the doer. He is not the receiver.
Yes.
Okay, don't do it with a doer attitude or a giver attitude. Giver is higher than the receiver. So this is the attitude with which many people do seva. But Swami said, there's no giver, no receiver here.
Yes.
And then the next higher level, Swami said, is the God in you is serving the God in him.
Yes.
So these are the aspects which entirely differentiate Satyasai organization from the rest of the organizations.
Yes. You are actually just serving yourself. You are working for your own betterment.
For our own betterment, for our own personal transformation.
Yes.
And without which all this is a waste.
Yes. Amazing. Wonderful, brother. I think there are so many such beautiful pearls that keeps dropping, you know, as we go on ruminating on Bhagwan's teachings. And I know there is so much more that you can share, and we got to continue this conversation. Thank you so much for coming to the studios. And yes, today you were a bit personal here and there. You shared some of your personal anecdotes, but it would be very nice to also capture how personally Swami guided you, because I would think of you as a representative of so many youngsters who long to have that opportunity with Bhagwan, and Swami groomed you, and those lessons that Swami instilled in you through various episodes, those are guiding principles for so many of us and so many who are joining the organization now. And I think once we share them, we use them as our guiding posts as we march on in life. Thank you so much for coming to the studios.
Sairam, brother. Thank you so much. Thank you. Sairam.
So that was Brother Y. Srinivas, Sai youth leader from the state of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. If you were listening to this conversation, you would have picked up how so beautifully Swami has shared so many precious lessons of life, how Swami has groomed so many members of Sai youth, just like Brother Y. Srinivas. And in those informal interactions, he has given such clear instructions and guidelines about how to lead a life, how to lead a beautiful life, how to lead happy life. Bhagwan did that and demonstrated in his own life. That's why he said, "My life is my message." He not only demonstrated, he also trained. He continued to live that life and continued to inspire others to lead that life. And whenever we did not get it, explicitly tell us this is how it should be. It's really wonderful. We are so blessed that we have the avatar come down and tell us about how to lead a life of happiness and peace. We will continue this conversation with Brother Y. Srinivas in the coming weeks. Dear listeners, do tell us what you felt about this program, and if you have any queries or questions that you want to ask Y. Srinivas brother about what Bhagwan has said on particular aspect of being a Sai youth, please feel free to do so. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. The time in the studios now is 9:53, and I have to bring the Thursday live session to a close. I'm Team Radio Sai S. Bishu. As I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama, Lava Kusha Ramakatha, which is being presented by Bhagwan's university students. This was presented on 25th May 2010. So you will listen to two students singing his glory. Let us lose ourselves in this glory and make our lives his melody. Thank you so much. Sign up.